You're listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Light this chalice this morning to remind us of the power and the beauty of balance and contrast. It is darkness that can make the flame of a single candle so powerful, and light that deepens those shadows in turn. A chalice flame is the meeting point, the union of the refuge, safety, and incredible beauty of darkness and the warmth, the assurance and the joy of light. May this act of lighting our chalice this morning remind us that we are stronger together. In all the complexities and the disagreements of relationship, because we are different and because we are one. These words by Frances Cozere, an active Canadian UU young adult. She is a young retiree, a social justice advocate, and a published author. So good morning to you all. Welcome to our service of worship. This is a service because it aims to serve you, and this is a worship from the origination of worth-ship, because it serves you by raising to worth things that matter. My name is Aaron Poe, a member of this congregation, and I'm leading this service today. I welcome you here on behalf of the generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings in Kana and Peramac land since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, to follow their own spiritual path. Any path that helps you to see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. We welcome you to join with us after this service for coffee, tea and conversation. It is our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in an open forum of fellowship. I invite you now to deepen and to bind that fellowship and covenant with one another by sharing with us any recent event that has been significant in your spiritual life. And mark that sharing by lighting a candle from our chalice and telling us as briefly as possible about it. As some things lie too deep for words, you're also very welcome to light a candle in silence. If you choose not to share, you can still take part in widening this circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and refraining from comment. I open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. This final candle I just lit represents all those things we choose not to share that remain silent in our hearts. May all the things we've shared, and also all those silent things, be honoured by this beloved community. We're going to do a hymn now. This is a bit of a new one. This is from number 16 in A Southern Chalice, not the Green Book. It's fairly simple, so hopefully we're right. All the words will be up on the screen.
Thank you. Thanks, Aaron. I'm reminded of the old joke about Unitarians not singing well because they're too busy checking out and whether they agree with the words. It's time for meditation. We'll have a period of silence for a minute. I'm going to read you a very short reading, Bianacht, from John O'Donohue. That's a blessing. And then we'll have another 2 minutes silence. So, whether you shut your eyes or just go out of focus or cast your eyes down, it's up to you. Just concentrate on your breathing, and we'll have a minute's silence first. On the day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. And when your eyes freeze behind the grey window and the ghost of loss gets into you, may a flock of colours, indigo, red and green and azure blue, come to awaken in you a meadow of delight. When the canvas frays in the crash of thought and a stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the waters a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. May the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind work these words of love around you. An invisible cloak to mind your life.
I give fair warning here that I'll be talking about aspects of darkness such as depression, which may be triggering for some people. If it's all too much, you're welcome to find space away from my words and recover how you will. It has been said that darkness is the absence of light, but could light be the absence of darkness? Some of you may recall what I have said about the binary and going beyond that binary into a richer experience. Light and darkness is a core binary many resonate with. Many also extend this into good and evil, happy and sad, and so on. I speak here of darkness in a very wide sense, not just darkness of vision, but darkness of all senses and things we don't have the ability to sense. So no sound, taste, touch, or aroma. As such, darkness is also silence and nothingness. In the binary, and especially the religious binary, darkness is the villain and light the hero, the knight in shining armour. Darkness gives way to the light, but the light forces itself upon darkness, which then might be considered good. As you might be able to tell, I want to give a different perspective. Consider the seventh principle. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. Appreciating darkness as part of everything. Now, in a sense, darkness is not strictly part of existence, is it? But we can't have a web without the spacing, defining connection of the threads, can we? Darkness is formless, a space of non-space, a nothing that could hold everything. A matrix of potential that is not yet manifest. Darkness is where our imagination interplays with light. In our imagination, we can play with anything, bring out any concept of form and shape, including things that can't exist in this reality. There is no real limit to what we can do with it, apart from our perceptual bias. As such, darkness is critical to creation and creativity. It is the canvas, the sheet of paper, the empty tape, the quiet room into which we pour our creations out. Darkness gives us all the space and potential we need. The same potential lies behind every closed door. It is the very nature of darkness. Sure, it might be something terrible or threatening behind that door, but so might it be something wonderful. We do not know. In that unknowing, we feel vulnerable. Fear arises, speaking to us our current perception of darkness. And darkness, in a spiritual sense, is so there. When we pray or meditate, we might close our eyes to the light. We commit our beloved ones to the deep earth. We celebrate the solstice of winter. Those who describe near-death experiences often talk of a dark tunnel, or darkness in the early stages. If God created light, then God was literally darkness before that point, was she not? So those who know a little atomic chemistry are aware that the vast majority of what we call matter is nothing. There's a great deal of space between atoms and within atoms, as the electrons zip around a nucleus and various forces interplay to create our material world, what we term reality. This reality, this room, this lectern, you and I, are scientifically mostly nothing. Darkness, potential, with a few law-abiding bits and forces of which we have limited understanding. The atom nucleus is around 100,000 times smaller than the atoms it is housed in. If this nucleus were the size of a peanut, then the atom would be about the size of a sports stadium. The entire human species would fit into the volume of a sugar cube, if all the darkness of space were lost. The irony of darkness is we cannot perceive it, except in terms of what we do not perceive. The darkness 100 million light years away in the depths of space is the same darkness brushing upon you when you turn out the light. Now, if you were a theist and you were looking for something vast, omnipresent, difficult to understand, and yet all these creations and wonders spring from it, darkness could well be that Deo you are looking for. In Buddhism, nirvana is an ultimate goal. Yet nirvana, literally, is a place of no thingness. Could it be that darkness gives potential for anything and light freezes it into place? How and where exactly is the interplay between the two? What is hiding there past the binary? It is something in us as we create. Sometimes darkness is likened to the soil. As one Buddhist monk I like to follow on YouTube said, the shit of life. Shit in the context of soil is manure. that has far less a negative connotation, and the unspoken potential for growth.
This reading is from Anan Kara John O'Donoghue. On a farm, you learn to respect nature, particularly for the wisdom of its dark underworld. When you sow things in the spring, you commit them to the darkness of the soil. The soil does its own work. It is destructive to interfere with the rhythm and wisdom of its darkness. You sow drills of potatoes on Tuesday and you're delighted with them. And you meet someone on a Wednesday who says that you spread the potatoes too thickly, you'll have no crop. You dig up the potatoes again and spread them more thinly. On the following Monday, you meet an agricultural advisor who says this particular variety of seed potatoes needs to be spread close together. You dig them up again and set them closer to each other. Now, if you keep scraping at the garden, you'll never allow anything to grow. People in our hungry modern world are always scraping at the clay of their hearts. They have a new thought, a new plan, a new syndrome that now explains why they are the way they are. They've found an old memory that opens a new wound. They keep on relentlessly, again and again, scraping the clay away from their own hearts. In nature, we do not see the trees, for instance, getting seriously involved in therapeutic analysis of their root systems or the whole stony world that they had to avoid on their way to the light. Each tree grows in two directions at once, into the darkness and out to the light, with as many branches and roots as it needs to embody its wild desires. Negative introspection damages the soul. It holds many people trapped for years and years, and ironically, it never allows them to change. It is wise to allow the soul to carry on its secret work in the night side of your life. You might not see anything stirring for a long time, and you might have only the slightest intimations of the secret growth that is happening within you, but these intimations are sufficient. We should be fulfilled and satisfied with them. You cannot dredge the depths of the soul with the meagre light of self-analysis. The inner world never reveals itself cheaply. Perhaps analysis is the wrong way to approach our inner dark.
In depression, there is a lot of reference to darkness, though the colour blue of light is also often mentioned. Joni Mitchell and Eiffel 65 sang about blue. Darkness and the blue is central to the unwellspring of spiralling sadness and despair. Around and around it goes like a black hole. This is a genuine black hole. Yet in space, a black hole is loaded with light gobbled up from the stellar material and dense as things get in this reality. Presuming black holes are still of this reality, that's an open question. Darkness of a black hole is the grip of forces holding the light too tightly for it to fly. And that's the amazing thing about a black hole. It is an overabundance of everything and light that makes it so dark. So when I said earlier, darkness is the absence of light, it can't be applied here, can it? Also interesting is this. This is a tiny little LED light powered by darkness, through the means of radiation into the depths of space. a reverse solar panel, if you will. Nihilism is a difficult topic, and I'm definitely oversimplifying it here in case you want to delve further. It's a spiritual and philosophical standpoint, and something I've brushed against through the depression, spiritual, atheism, and antinatalism communities. Antinatalism means anti-birth, and it pretty much is what it says on the tin. Mainstream nihilism raises to worth nothingness, destruction, obliteration, fading away, the great void, negation. It is essentially all about annihilation of everything, because what is just sucks too much. As such, nihilism feeds on despair, attempting to mirror it into hope. For antinatalists, it is despair about overpopulation and the struggles with toxic systems the powers here hold so dear. For the depressed, the despair is about one's life, one's potential, one's very worth. The hope, if we call it that, is that nothingness is a better thing than what is right now. A hope to push out all that is and reset back to the black. Nihilism is social. It is no less than a form of suicide systemically instead of individually. If you think that sounds dangerous, it really is. It gives you an idea of just how serious mass despair really is. I remind you here of our first principle, probably our greatest counter to nihilism, the inherent worth and dignity of every person without exception, without condition. Nihilism is pushing back into the darkness. Yet darkness does not judge. Pull creations out or shove creations back in. It's all up to you. There are other forms of nihilism that are less fundamentally all-negating. One form is that since nothing matters, or there is no God, or both, everything is permitted. A risky and experimental kind of creativity. In a binary sense, to bring about light or good things, one needs to embrace the truth of things called dark. Veganism is acutely aware of animal suffering and death. Gay people are aware of how people treat them due to their differences. Minorities of every kind hold awareness of parts of darkness. They live the experience. It is no more real to them because they feel it directly. Kind people are aware of what it is the other person is suffering from or needs right now. Ethics is centered on doing things with awareness of what the ramifications might be, and therefore choosing better. And that's really where toxic positivity and illness of the light comes from. Stuff the ramifications of what you do or say. We are positive people, with no time or inclination for your negative talk. They don't spark joy, so throw them in the dump. It's the same energy as the prosperity gospel of the evangelist and Scott Morrison's ilk. A belief in positivity, so long as you happen to have an easy life. Their belief is that when bad things happen, you deserve them. So easy to hold on, so long as no stick pokes in the spokes of your wheel of life, as long as everything's rosy, you're right, and everything else is wrong. It's the very best of light and joy, blind faith. Yet blindness from blind faith means darkness in a literal sense, and that is a little window into the interplay of light and darkness. So subtle and insistent is your belief that light and darkness are opposites. You miss when they are active together. They are usually together in me, in you, in the growing tree, in this lovely church, and, as every parent knows, their sweet little darlings, who are also right little monsters when they want to be. That is why so many true, celebrated heroes have done some awful things before or after that which made them heroes. And there are also some rather nasty people who have also done wonderful things. Adolf Hitler is one of them. Simplifying life into light and darkness is much too simple. Hence the quote attributed to Einstein, "The practical principle of Occam's razor, everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler." It appears the quote actually originated from composer Roger Sessions, who used a music-related quote of Einstein's to fuel it. So then, what is light? If you could stand, if you're able, for the benediction. Cherish your doubts, for doubt is the servant of truth. Question your convictions, for beliefs too tightly held strangle the mind and its natural wisdom. Suspect all certitudes, for the world whirls on, nothing abides. Yet in our inner rooms full of doubt, inquiry and suspicion, let a corner be reserved for trust. For without trust there is no space for communities to gather or for friendships to be forged. Indeed, this is the small corner where we connect and reconnect with each other. These words by Reverend Dr. Michael Schuller, Parish Minister of the First Unitarian Society of Madison, Wincousin.
We hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitarianSA.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians or by visiting our website at unitarianSA.org.au.